Hey, everybody. Welcome to the NYC Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Levine. I'm also one of the owners of EBMG. We manage about 100 New York City buildings, co-op condo rental buildings, a little bit of mixed use. Today, it's December 11th. It's almost 8 o'clock at night when I'm taping this. And what I wanted to do was talk about the issue in the Bronx today at 1915 Billingsley Terrace. If you've been watching the news or if you're listening to this in the future, there was a building collapse. And I immediately went to the Department of Buildings website to see what I could figure out about this building, because it's not a building that I manage, but we've seen enough of these things where I thought it would be interesting. Now, before I get into that, if you would like to, you can email me or email the show at nycrealestatepodcast@gmail.com. That's nycrealestatepodcast@gmail.com. Again, my company is EBMG. You can check us out at EBMG.com, and let's go on to it. So this building is a 7-story building located on Billingsley Terrace in the Bronx. And what I found looking through the DOB portal when I went to looking at what they've been doing with their facade inspections, I thought that it was pretty interesting. And I saw a lot of action on Twitter and on the news and on the web, just, trying to get a sense of what happened, wondering if it was a gas explosion. But then I went into their facade reports for their Local Law 11. If you've been following long enough, we talked about facade inspection safety program, the FISP program, which is also called Local Law 11 in 98. And what that mandates is for buildings that are over 6 stories, every 5 years, you have to go in and essentially do a test. Well, maybe not a test, it's not the right way to say it, but we have to drop off the building, have an architect or an engineer, somebody who's a qualified exterior wall inspector. It's a QE, Q-E-W-I, and certain people have those. And what they'll do is they'll look at all of the facade points. They'll look at the brick, they'll look at the mortar, the copings, the window lintels, the sills. And now within the last few cycles, they've mandated that you have to do anything that's attached to the building, and that could be a fire escape or a railing. And these are really important. We go through probably about 50 of these inspections over a course of a cycle within my company. Those buildings that are over 6 stories, that's how many that we have. So we're really good at like tracking those out. But what I found when going through this was really interesting. If you look at the way that the city lets you file, there's 3 ways. There's what's called a SAFE, and that means that there's no issues. SAFE with the Repair and Maintenance Program, which is also a shorthand for SWARMP. That basically says you're not necessarily unsafe today, but if you let these issues go through until the next cycle, the issues that we're calling out will be considered to be unsafe. So even though they might not be physically unsafe, you're administratively unsafe. And the city will fine you. They'll put you into a penalty phase. You have to throw up a bridge and you have to do the work. And then you have the worst part, which is an unsafe building. And those are the buildings that immediately have to throw up a bridge. The architects nowadays have to actually tell the DOB before they tell the client by law, and that's under their seal, that there's an unsafe condition. And then they notify the client. Hopefully you can work with an architect or an engineer that will do both at the same time so that you have time to, put up the bridge and protect the public, protect the residents, make sure that nothing is going to fall. So with that being said, the city doesn't like swarm, or swarm, unsafe, swarm. If you see the pattern that I'm going through, they don't like to have you in a negative position. They want to see that you're doing the work, that you're putting it into safe. The last 3 cycles, cycle 7, cycle 8, and cycle 9, this building specifically filed first swarm in cycle 7, which was essentially 10 years ago. So by the time that cycle 8 had to come by, it was needing to have that work done, or else it would be considered to be unsafe. So cycle 8 comes by, and this is really during COVID, but this is also a misguided approach to explaining the Local Law 11 delays. And I'll read through some of the report later. But the way that it's written in the report was that they expected that COVID would elongate this work, and that was a reason for the swarm conditions from the prior cycle in 7 not being done. But if we remember back into the COVID time and the Local Law 11, those were essential repairs. So the Local Law 11 work did not shut down. We were going through it. You might have had issues where you had different vendors that maybe had issues with employees and people were getting sick or people weren't eligible to work. But in reality, this should have been taken care of. So in cycle 7, we've noted that they filed swarm. In cycle 8, they filed unsafe. And the unsafe is really because they didn't do the swamp repairs from before. And then there were other things that were called out. 5 years later, we're looking at cycle 9, which is what we're in now. And they're in cycle 9A. So they're in the very first part of these cycles. We're just ending in February coming up the entire ninth cycle, which is cycle 9C. Remember, they're staggered. So 2 year periods, they're staggered. So this was really the first. It should have been from 2020 to 2022. And then cycle B would be 21 to 23. And then subcycle C, which we're in now, it's closing out. It was 22 to 24, February 21st of 22 to February 21st of 24. So we've seen this cycle of swarm, unsafe, unsafe. And immediately that flagged my attention to this building that has collapsed. If you look online, you'll see that it's really the corner of the building and it just looks like it just fell on itself. And they're looking through, and I'm sure they're looking for residents or missing people, and it's nighttime and it's cold and it's the worst case scenario for a building manager. So going back to the information that I pulled off, here's the general description. I just thought this was interesting to cover since it's timely. And it's really helpful as a building manager or somebody who understands or lives in a building that is over six stories and is part of this facade safety program, that you have to do these in a certain way and within a certain time frame so that accidents and catastrophes like this don't happen. So this is the general description from the Cycle 9 report, which was filed in 2021. So we're 2 years past this. And from what I saw online, from the videos, it did not look to me, and I don't know the whole story here, but they have bridging up. So that's a positive sign, but there was no signs of work and there were no additional reports that were filed subsequently after this initial unsafe filing from more than 2 years ago. We're going on almost 3 years at this point. So it says on February 21st, 2020, the architect filed an eighth cycle report, which classified the building at 1915 Billingsley Terrace as unsafe. The architect was hired to assemble repair drawings in order to identify the conditions of damage on the building. While nothing on the building was immediately hazardous, the building was considered unsafe because the seventh cycle swarm conditions had not been corrected and there was significant masonry damage throughout the facade. The conditions of damage are identified on the repair drawings, which are included in the supporting documents. Since the eighth cycle report was filed before the outbreak of COVID-19, it was expected that the work would be complete by February 2021. However, the outbreak of COVID-19 delayed the start on the repairs. This is where I have a problem with, because yes, we were in this issue, but as I noted before, these were really emergency repairs that should have been handled. A sidewalk shed is present. So at this point in 2020, this sidewalk shed is there. I see a sidewalk shed today. I'm assuming that there was one for 3 years from now, or maybe 3.5 years. So a sidewalk shed is present along the south elevation on Billingsley Terrace, along the east elevation on Phelan Place, and along the north elevations on West Burnside. The architect conducted an initial inspection on February 18th, 2020, which included a visual inspection of all facades from the ground and the roof. The roof was accessed to inspect the parapet interior, bulkhead conditions, roof surfaces, and roof appurtenances. The architect did not conduct a hands-on inspection since the building is quote-unquote unsafe. On March 23rd, 2021, the architect briefly visited the building and the conditions observed in 2020 have not changed. Moving forward, the summary of the findings. Conditions of damage are illustrated on the drawings attached in the supporting documents. The following seven unsafe conditions were identified. Remember, this is 2020. We're almost in 2024. Cracked brick, vertical cracks at sills and water tables, loose and damaged mortar, a slightly bowed section of parapet. And that, you know, the parapet is that wall on top of the building. If you're not familiar with construction and you're just listening to this, and it really is both providing a safety net, you know, in a sense, on for people that are on the roof so that they don't just go flying off. Now the parapets have to be 42 inches in height. Theirs are lower. I'll get to that in a second. But it's also one of the points of structural integrity. You know, when you have bowing parapets, that will lead to a possible collapse of certain conditions and bricks. So they have a slightly bowed section of parapet, cracks at the parapet interior, and the parapets are less than 42 inches in height at some locations, which would have to be raised. It has to be 42 inches above the roof level. There were three safe conditions that were identified, and it was deteriorated coating at the parapet interior, damaged stub walls, and deteriorated paint at fire escapes. So the conclusion and the recommendation section of this report. This ninth cycle Local Law 11 report classifies the building at 1915 Billingsley Terrace, Bronx, New York, as unsafe. General recommendations are the owner or property manager should have someone qualified check the facade regularly to be certain that no loose items or objects are placed on sills, ledges, fire escapes, or other areas where they could fall. He should also be certain that windowsills are kept free of debris. Similarly, the owner or property manager must take measures to make sure that window air conditioning units are properly installed, maintained, and supported at all times. Similar to, this is coming off the what I'm reading, but similar to where we want to make sure that the railings are safe and the bricks are safe, by law, you have to have properly supported air conditioners if they are window mounted. There are guidelines for it. And if you are improperly installing or attaching an air conditioning to the apartment, to the building, that is considered unsafe. So if you walk around the city, and I see this all the time, you'll see a window mounted AC with like a 2x4 holding it up under or something propping it up. That's completely illegal, completely unsafe. Technically speaking, if an architect or an engineer would go by the building, they have really the onus is on them to alert DOB that they have an unsafe condition that they are witnessing. So items of this nature are frequently installed on a temporary basis and cannot be the responsibility of the engineer, trying to hedge, obviously, against you could inspect right today, but tomorrow somebody else could put something on the building as an AC and then it turns into an unsafe. So the architect engineer is saying, as of today, this is what I'm seeing. I'm not responsible for what's happening tomorrow. It is recommended that the owner or property manager keep records of all exterior building repairs and of all problems related to the building's exterior. These records should be made available to the QEWI. We said that's the Qualified Exterior Wall Inspector, performing the Local Law 11 inspection or providing services related to the exterior facade. So this is a little bit concerning. If I move on, and we go to the description and location and classifications of conditions observed, this is item G in the actual facade report with DOB. It says unsafe conditions, and I might be repeating a little bit of myself, but I think this is just important just to get context. The building is considered unsafe since the seventh cycle conditions have not been corrected and since there is a significant masonry damage throughout the facade. Work is scheduled to be done in 2020, and a sidewalk shed has already been ordered. All conditions of damage and their locations are identified on the repair drawings included. Representative photographs of the condition of damage are attached in the supporting documents. They went into the seven unsafe and the three safe conditions. Exterior appurtenances, parapet coping, parapet cap, parapet railing. Brick with concrete copings at the street-facing elevations and I have something blocking this word, and brick, ceramic camelback copings at the rear elevation, the fire escapes. There are four fire escapes, balconies, and terraces. There are six metal Juliet balconies, three on Billingsley Terrace and three on West Burnside Avenue. For canopies and awnings, all awnings are at the first floor. There is one awning at the north corner on the east elevation. There are awnings covering most of the north elevation. Windows, metal, double-hung sills, are precast concrete. The cornice, there's no cornice, ornamental masonry. There's a third floor water table and a fourth floor brick water table that wrap around the street facing elevations. At the corners, there are brick arranged in diamond pattern. Several of the third floor windows have geometrically arranged brick framing them. The windows with the Juliet balconies also have precast elements framing them. The only other ornamental masonry is at the entrance, which has some ornamental precast elements. Regarding AC, several external window AC units were observed through the building. On the roof, it includes wires, a brick bulkhead, drains, pipes, a metal TV tower, and TV dishes. Exterior appurtenances include wiring, an ice container, security cameras, lights, and signs. Condition of exterior appurtenances. At the time of the inspection, some of the exterior appurtenances were in poor condition with discernible defects. Therefore, the exterior appurtenances are considered unsafe. Remember, it's back in 2020. Condition of the balcony, guardrail, handrail, and parapet. No hazardous damage was apparent at the parapets. However, the parapet is of insufficient height to meet guard assembly requirements at several locations. Therefore, the guard assemblies are considered unsafe. The building must comply with the 1922 building code because the building was built circa 1927 and no substantial alterations have been performed to its exterior. The architect made access to the roof to inspect the parapet conditions. The inspection of the parapet interior included pushing with significant force to determine if any areas of the parapet were structurally deficient. A representative portion of the fire escapes were inspected by vigorously shaking the guard assemblies to determine if any of these assemblies were loose or unattached. At the time of the inspections, all parapet walls on the roof and fire escapes were in good condition and structurally sound enough to act as an effective guard assembly. However, the parapet walls were not of a sufficient height at all locations, measuring approximately 30 to 38 inches. Based on the ninth cycle inspection, which is the cycle that they're in now, this is what this was filed for. Remember, they're two out from when they were swamp. So seventh, they were swamp, had to be done by cycle eight. Now it's cycle nine. It still hasn't been done. Now, not only are you administratively unsafe, but you're also considered to be unsafe. The architect considers the building's guard assemblies to be structurally sound, but unsafe and not code compliant. The condition, okay, causes of conditions observed. This is paragraph H in the filing. The conditions of deterioration were generally caused by aging of the building, exposure to the elements, and natural deterioration of building materials over time. No maintenance had been performed on the building since the previous report was filed. Since the eighth cycle report was filed before the outbreak of COVID-19, it was expected that work would be completed by 2021. We're circling over what we said before, but they're blaming that on the COVID issue. So we've got a bunch of ECB violations. As of 2020, there were currently three open ECB violations on the DOB website. Two of them are for failure to file with the commissioner about a change in occupancy. The remaining one is for failure to submit the eighth cycle local law report on time. Which is an issue because you get unsafe if you don't file it on time. Part of this process when you do Local Law 11 is having a date where the Department of Buildings recognizes in your filing when you're going to complete these unsafe repairs. For this cycle nine, the completion date was 2 years past the initial survey, essentially, or when it could have been surveyed. It's February 21st of 23, which is actually a whole year after their cycle filed. This is really the end of cycle B. If we remember, they're staggered starts. So they were giving them a year, which to me was actually a lot of time. So what I'm seeing here is, without knowing much and without knowing, you know, what they were doing, when they were doing, how they were doing, it just appears to me that this was a building that didn't do the unsafe work that they were needing to do. And I wouldn't necessarily put this on the architect or the engineer at all, because they notified the building properly. They notified the DOB properly. And now maybe it was the building ownership. I think it's a rental building, that they didn't do the work that they were supposed to do. So this is a really good tale of what not to do when you have a local law inspection. And just because you're a building that's taller than six stories doesn't mean that you're the only ones that are susceptible to these types of inspections. If you're a building that's four stories, three stories, even one story, you have an obligation to keep your building safe. So this is really concerning. And as we've seen, what the city does is they're very reactive. They come at you if there is an issue somewhere else in the city. And that's how we got to handrails and fire escapes. Somebody about 10 years ago or more fell off of a balcony, unfortunately died in the accident. But right after that, we had to, I think it was cycle seven, we had to reopen cycle seven, even though we had filed, we had to do an amendment. And the amendment consisted of looking at all the balcony attachments, the guardrails, the fire escapes. So this is something to really watch. And because we're almost at the end of the entire cycle nine, the year of 2024, from February to February of 25, is that rest year where we don't have any new buildings that are coming into the cycle. So what the city typically does during this time is they go, they review all of the issues, they amend the law, and then for cycle 10, which is going to start most likely in February of 2025, they're going to have new issues. Now, short of the next cycle, I could also imagine that the city is going to take the opportunity to look into these buildings more seriously that either didn't file on time or kept going swamp safe or swamp unsafe, unsafe, or swamp, swamp, swamp. And they want to get rid of those patterns of not doing the work, putting it, you know, somewhere in the future. And God forbid people die. There's no reason for it. And it's a dereliction of duty by a building owner to not having, you know, done the proper work. So that's where I'm at with this. As we get more, if anything relevant pops up, you know, I'm going to be happy to do a, you know, a quick episode on it. I also just got an email tonight, which was really great. And it was timely because it sort of deals with these contracts, but I'll give a shout out to Mark Schneider at Schneider Bushell, who's an attorney that we do a lot of business with. And he sent out an email tonight about the law amended regarding retainage on contracts. And now I'm going to plagiarize a little bit here and continue reading. And I thank him for doing my work, but typically, when we've been doing a lot of these large scale projects and we have AIA contracts and we have payment requisitions, we usually take 10% off the top as a retainage and say, we're holding back 10%, we're retaining it from each payment. And at the end of the project, once all the checklist items are done and we're confident that no work is needed and you've done everything that you as the contractor need to do, that's when we release the 10%. Or if there are reasons that are needing to have this money held back. Maybe they didn't finish the work. Maybe they went out of business. Maybe, you know, there's a million reasons why you would say, I'm not giving back this money, or I'm giving a portion of it to you back. Those are the discussions that we have. So this is, I'm going to read from their email, which pretty much goes into the interesting part of this. On November 17th, 2023, New York State enacted the Retainage Reduction Act. This legislation brings crucial changes to New York's general business law affecting certain current and all future construction contracts entered into by cooperative condominium and homeowners association communities. The act provides that for any construction contract equal to or greater than $150,000, which is primarily like the bulk of Local Law 11 work, and it really is pretty expensive, the property owner, which includes community associations, can only withhold a maximum of 5% as retainage. There are severe penalties for noncompliance. The act applies to contracts entered into after November 17th, 2023. The 5% maximum retainage rule. The act now restricts retainage to 5% of the contract sum. Retainage must also be released within 30 days after the owner provides its final approval of the work. In the event the owner does not release the retainage funds within 30 days of providing final approval, the owner, and that's usually the board or the community association, shall be subject to pay the contractor 1% interest per month from the date the retention was due. This is a significant financial penalty for noncompliance with this portion of the law. It also limits the ability of property owners to leverage retainage to compel contractors to complete other items such as manufacturer's warranties and lien waivers. As such, it is important that boards, managing agents, and or the engineer architect hired for the projects pay careful attention to when substantial completion is achieved and how it is defined. Let's go into the definition of substantial completion. The changes to the law were aimed to reduce delays in the release of retainage to contractors on private construction jobs that have been substantially completed. Pursuant to the new law, contractors are now authorized to invoice private property owners, which includes co-ops, condos, and HOAs, upon reaching substantial completion of projects. This means now more than ever, boards and managing agents alike must be aware of each contract's precise definition of what substantial completion means. This is because under the law, substantial completion means as such term is defined in the contract or contemplated by the contract. This awareness and clearer delineation of substantial completion in your community's construction contracts can prevent premature billing and disputes over when the final payment is due. Since the new law provides that the contract can define what substantial completion means, we believe if the contract properly defines substantial completion as 100% completion, then communities can still hold a retainage of 5% of the contract sum until all work is completed or even 30 days after that date. Furthermore, while property owners cannot withhold retainage for more than 30 days after a project is complete, nothing in the law prevents the contract from providing that the final payment, other than the 5% retainage, will not be owed until other such items are met, such as manufacturer's warranty, a certificate of occupancy, etc. As such, it is extremely important to engage your community's attorney to review and or draft all construction contracts. This will not only ensure compliance with the new law, but also make sure the association is as protected as possible and when the final payment needs to be made. The effective date of the act was November 17th, 2023. So if your community signed a construction contract for more than $150,000 after that date, and that contract calls for your community to withhold more than 5% as retainage, you should immediately modify your payment schedule to bring your retainage to no more than 5%. In the event this scenario does not apply to your community, it's imperative that the above concerns are considered during contract drafting and negotiation when your community next plans to commence a construction project. The Retainage Reduction Act marks a pivotal shift in how construction contracts in New York are drafted, negotiated, and implemented. Co-op, condos, and HOA communities must acclimate to these changes to ensure successful project execution and sound financial management going forward. So that act takes a little bit of the teeth away from the buildings where we're saying the work's not complete. You're not doing it on time. Maybe this penalty is also put into the contract for going over the project length, you know, or taking too long or any number of reasons. But the gist of this is talk to your attorney if you're going to be doing that. So while we wind up, this may be the last podcast episode of the year. Just want to remind you of a few things that we're working on. Make sure that all of your buildings are registered with HPD. We have over 100 buildings that I think we're up to 130 or 140 individual multiple dwelling registrations within the five boroughs for our company. And it's really something that we started in August, because they expire at the end of August. So we have to get them all signed by September. But if you don't do that, then you can't get to the next step of December, where we're in right now, and you can't file the bed bugs report, which is required by HPD. So if your building is out of compliance with its yearly property registration, you therefore cannot be in compliance with your bed bug filing. And that always tells us how each building had bed bugs or did not have bed bugs. And you can trace that on HPD's platform from year to year. So you'll say how many units had bed bugs this year, how many units were treated, how many were reinfected, and how many were retreated. And then we have to either put that somewhere in a conspicuous place so that everybody could see it, or we have to distribute it with new leases. And we usually do that with the sales and leasing arm of our company, or with the lease agreements if we're having rental buildings and subleases and all that good stuff. But it's also the end of the year, which means that you also have to file your yearly board disclosure conflict form. So every building should be signing for their board if there was or if there was not a conflict of interest with any of the board members. I'm sure we've done podcasts on this before. So if you just go through some of our old episodes, you'll find probably both of those topics covered at length. So we've learned a lot tonight. You know, that I hope that we provided some useful information and context for this building that collapsed in the Bronx. And I'm feeling for everybody there. I hope everybody walks away and that all families are kept together, especially in these holiday seasons. And I can't even imagine what it's like in winter to, you know, have your home basically destroyed and having to have, you know, whether it's finding family and friends or having a special, you know, services like the Red Cross come and help you out. So thoughts are with everybody that's affected by this. If you know anybody, please send, you know, our thoughts their way. Again, you can, if you've made it this far down the rabbit hole, you send us an email at nycrealestatepodcast@gmail.com. nycrealestatepodcast@gmail.com. I'm Mark Levine. Please subscribe if you haven't. Share, that would be great. If you could rate us 5 stars, if you would be interested in doing that, I would love for you to do that. If you have any questions, let us know. Happy New Year, happy holidays, and we'll be back in 2024. Take care.